Okay.
Well.
So your major professor was lying in the bus lanes with his students protesting the.
Protesting the bus lane. They wanted. Well, there were people protesting everything all through there.
And that was, and so you really didn't have a person that you could turn to.
No, I said. So one of the secretaries made out my class list, and I think she even signed his name to it. Of course, I wasn't really doing anything like the research that my husband's grad students were involved in. I was just in the beginning because I was taking, the courses I was taking was biometry, which is statistics in agronomy, mm-hmm. and agricultural statistics, and then basic computer sciences was the other one. And then I decided I'd take a course in the summer of 1967 in grad school. I was supposed to be part-time, and I decided that I'd rather work and earn money. And I said, down here it says 210-67 withdrew employment.
There you go.
But I was working half time all over the place. I used to carry two bags around. One was all the stuff for one job and one was all the stuff for the other job.
You mean on campus?
On campus, yeah. I worked several half time jobs and
was this in computer areas?
As a programmer.
As a programmer.
Yeah, and as
so there were plenty of jobs on.
Oh yeah, this was. There were a lot of them were federally funded research projects. Like one of them that I worked on was the Wood County project, which was expanded rehabilitation, where they were covering physically handicapped, mentally retarded, and mentally handicapped. I mean, there was a difference between emotional, mental, and physical problems, and they were adding something, I think they were calling it culturally deprived or something to that, and this was that done up in Wood County, and I was hired on that one and organized all their data for them.
So there was a lot of federal money coming in.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of federal money coming in. Yeah, and the same thing I worked in sociology for, oh dear, what's his name? He did the high school project on studying. He's still doing, it's Dr. Sewell. Mm-hmm. I was programming on the high school project, which is the survey of high school students. That, I mean, he's following them forever.
Mm-hmm.
From
forever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has a big data bank, and he keeps inquire. I don't know how often he checks up on them, but he gets information on them, and I did several other jobs, but this was all in Fortran.
So you were doing this as you were taking these other courses?
Yeah, as I was working in the grad school, taking these courses, but it just seemed as though I would rather work.
Well,
and I decided that what made me think of it was that I said, well, if I get a master's degree, now I already know how to program, and I like to program, and I like to design systems. If I get a master's degree, I would have to go to Minneapolis or Chicago or somewhere to get an appropriate position, and it would be doing all the nitty-gritty inside, and I'd rather do the outside work with computers. So I just decided that it was a nice thought, but it wasn't really something because I didn't figure I could go off and leave my husband.
Yeah, so you weren't interested in a full-time job somewhere as a professor or anything like that?
I really enjoyed writing programs and testing them and
What about a job as a computer programmer on campus part-time in those days? Was the pay pretty good compared to other part-time jobs?
Were
you considered really skilled labor, more or less?
Every time I switched from one job to another, I jacked my price up $1 an hour. I started out actually at $1.75 an hour, and I worked up to, I think, $6 an hour.
Now, that was pretty good.
For me. I other computer programmers were getting more, but...
Were they scarce? Were there more jobs than people in that field?
Yeah, there were, because I had no trouble. Just there would be a notice on the board, programmer wanted for such and such, and I would call. And I, you know, when one project ended, I had no trouble finding another one. Then all of a sudden, the federal grants dried up.
When was that about?
Must have been about. Oh boy, that's hard to know. It was at the end of this project in that I had worked on in behavioral studies, which was, you know, the that county thing, expanded rehabilitation.
The Wood County thing.
The Wood County thing that was in, what do they call the people that work, that aren't on faculty and aren't...
Academic staff.
Yeah. Oh, it was something like, a specialist, that's what they call. I was a specialist in studies in behavioral disabilities. I carried that thing around. That ran out, and I did consulting on it for a while, but... And I can't remember when that was. They finished and got all their stuff published. And
so pretty much you noticed on campus at that point that there were just not as many advertisements up for help as there had been?
No, well, everybody that I was working for said, we don't have any more money. The feds are cutting it. And I can't put a date on that exactly. So... I'll try and get a job in, you know, in business, see if they'll take me. Well, they didn't. A lot of places that I went were really interested in what I had done, the type of work I had done, but they wanted COBOL. So I thought, okay, so I went to METC. And took a semester in their, what they call computer studies, and took four courses. Got straight A's, much to the disgust of the guy. I went into an advanced programming course, and the fellow said, nobody's ever gotten through this course without taking the beginning one. And I said, well, if you don't mind, I think I'll try. So anyway, that going there for a semester, and I didn't want to finish it. I just wanted to bone up and get the basics of business programming. And then I went out and got a temporary job with the state. And worked my way up till when I retired. I was a supervisor, and I was a systems analyst, and what was I called? Horrible thing. computer support manager for the state in I worked in several different departments in state areas and worked in one place that gave contract, that was where we did contract programming for other different agencies. So
more or less through these courses at UW and your jobs, you sort of cobbled together a career that eventually got you into state government, where you had a...
Yeah, and that was that state government is nice to work for. It really is, because although I will admit I was the oldest person there and I was paid less, you know, because everybody got, depending on how long you work there, you get paid more. But I was happy, and I got 3 exceptional performance awards because I was a hard worker. Anyway, that was, then I retired in 1987, the same year my husband retired.
Let's go back to the UW for just a moment. You mentioned that in your letter to me and today that as a non-traditional student, was that term used when you...
Oh, no.
You were just an older student, right?
I was a student, and nobody seemed to notice. I mean, what was I? I was in my late 30s. I didn't look very old. I didn't think.
So as a student who's a little older than most and with a family, you didn't have the time, you said, for joining organizations much?
No, I was selected to Omicron Nu, which was the Home Ec Honor Society. Ah. And then when I dropped out of school, I resigned because I figured, geez, that's very sweet of them, but... I may not finish my degree, and I don't. And it was supposed to, and it was because I had high grades that I was elected to.
Did that entail any kind of responsibilities? Did you go to any meetings or?
Theoretically, I found out that it entailed paying some dues.
For the honor of paying money.
And it's one of my good friends is a member, and she thought it was wonderful, but. We were not very wealthy. In fact, we were about dirt poor while we were going through all this. I borrowed money to pay for my tuition and paid it back with part-time jobs and stuff. That's basically how I got through college. Of course, tuition wasn't all that expensive then. But then jobs didn't pay that much.
Yeah,
then.
That's right. It balanced out.
Yeah.
During your years on campus, near the end of your campus time, the student uprisings were beginning.
Oh, yeah.
What was your perspective on that? What were you able to observe on that over time?
Well, I had. Oh dear, I had a couple of. Run-ins with I remember I was very upset. My husband's building was on the list of buildings to be bombed and set on fire. Their trucks were being burnt. They were sneaking around at night and trying to burn up the university trucks that they used to go to the field in.
Why were they picking on us? I mean,
entomology, Silent Spring.
Oh,
oh yeah.
I thought it was mainly directed at the.
Oh no! Oh no! The environmentalists and the protesters, and they're all the same people, as far as I can tell. And I had, by then, I had 2 kids in college. in the late 60s and early 70s, our daughter was in college and was at the university. Both daughters went to school and at the university, and they came and they were, our older daughter was in taking history, and she had classes in the Commerce Building, and she would come home and tell me all these stories about the kids with their backpacks filled with rocks lining up on the sidewalks trying to keep Dow Chemical and those places from having you know, interviews recruiting, for jobs, and of course they had all the Mayor Soglin, bless your soul. he was one of the most obstreperous, mm-hmm, of the protesters, and one of the, oh, they, I don't know, they were crazy. I just couldn't believe the things they did. They were protesting everything. This is when they were trying to shut all the university down. They tried to close, you know, eliminate classes. They tried to keep everybody from going to class. And I was sort of on the periphery of it. But one daughter worked in the library, and the other one was taking classes, and they both had several whiffs of gas, tear gas and stuff, and they just hated it. And Linda said, you know, you'd think, well, if you want to get an education, why in the heck don't they go somewhere else and leave the people that want to go to school, instead of trying to disrupt everybody's classes. And then when I was working on the Wood County project, I was working over in Sterling Hall, and I had stored data there. I was doing all my programming on the Sterling Hall computer, and I had old data that I had. It was all punch cards at that time. I transformed most of their stuff from punch cards to tape, but I had this historical data that had been collected, and it was up in the storeroom, the user room in Sterling Hall, when they bombed it. And sort of stopped everything that was being done on the computer, because it wrecked the computer. And about 2 weeks after the bombing, I got permission to climb up in the building and try to find my data.
Did you?
No, I couldn't find it, but boy, was that a mess. Trying to beams down, you know, I had to test every step and climb over beams, and I finally got to the user room, and I don't know what happened to him. It wasn't there.
Let's go back to Sterling Hall bombing. That was a real important event in the history of this campus and the history of the student movement across country. Were you living here at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear it?
No.
Or feel it or anything?
No. My son was living about four blocks away, and he heard it. Mm-hmm. He was down on, living on campus. He was married and going to, down on.
What was the general feeling in the community when that?
It was terrible. It blew out, you know, blew windows out in the hospital next door, and it was just awful. Of course, there were some people that thought it was great, you know. But
did those people really? Did they feel it was great, despite the fact that researcher was killed?
I don't know. They sure ran. You know, no. I think that kind of put a halt to it. But I had one night. Our son was working for a sound store on State Street, and he gave me one of these scanners that you can listen to police calls. Mm-hmm. And the night they had all the rioting and they were burning things and blocking streets all around campus. I listened on the scanner, and I couldn't believe that this was going on in Madison. It was a pitched battle between students and the National Guard and the police, and it was just terrible. And I'll never understand why students get, well, these were all the fairly communist sympathizing students. They really were. They
was that the general feeling?
Oh, yeah, they were going around saying ho, ho, Ho Chi Minh, and I worked in sociology, and actually I quit that job because the grad students in one area were flying a big red flag, and they said they were supporting the North Vietnamese against the American soldiers, and I tried to talk them into taking the flag down. It didn't do any good. I took an American flag in and hung it in the room that I was working in, but I'm not an American, I'm Canadian, it was, never.
You said something interesting a moment ago. You said after Sterling Hall, if I heard you correctly, you said that kind of put a halt to it.
Yeah.
Could you expand on that for just a second? Do you think that the bombing really...
I think it shocked, really shocked, because of the poor guy that was killed and the damage that was done and the fact that they flew away. You know, they ran like rabbits to get away from the place. And I think it did sort of punch a hole into the protest movement, that people were really shocked that they would do this. That was a terrible thing to do, just terrible.
I just really have one more area that I'd like to cover briefly. In your years on campus, your years here in Madison, let's talk about discrimination for just a moment. Were you ever discriminated against because of your gender or because of the fact
no.
that you went to school as an older student, or did
no.
you ever feel any of that?
No, I've never been sexually molested either.
Well, we have that on the record. Were you aware of...
Or sexually harassed.
Harassed. Was that an issue with any of your friends or with anyone?
I don't think so. I've always worked in male dominated areas and working in the factory. Well, there were a lot of women there because all the men were old. But working in the foundry, I think there were myself and one other gal they finally hired were the only two women working in the foundry, and working in programming. It was originally a very male area of, I don't know, and I have never experienced or noticed or felt any kind of discrimination. Employment, I did. I was working in one job for this one area, I won't say where, for the state, and I had been working there, and I was their major programmer. This was my beginning first-time job, and they hired a fellow who didn't have as much experience as I did and didn't know, and I had to teach him everything, and they paid him more than they paid me, and I got mad, and I said, I want a promotion. You said I was going to be your lead programmer, and you're paying him more than you're paying me, and he doesn't know as much as I do. And I said, I'll just have to quit if you don't rectify the situation. Well, my boss accused me of blackmailing him.
That's an interesting reversal.
He said, "You're trying to blackmail me. We need you." And I said, "Well, you'll have to do better than you're doing." And I quit. And oh, that was terrible. I hated being without a job for.
Oh, you did follow through on it.
Oh yeah, 3 months and no work. Oh, when I was used to working overtime all the time, but I thought, oh boy, what do you mean blackmail? I mean.
That's interesting.
I asked my husband if what I said was blackmail. He said, "Heck no, he's just stupid."
I think that's one possible interpretation, certainly. During your years at UW, who was president? Was that E.B. Fred for a good part of that time?
Yeah, he was.
Did you know what was Dr. Fred's reputation on campus?
I think it was good. My husband was a very non-political scientist. He never got involved in the politics of the university. He was much too interested in just the scientific area. And he didn't get involved, and I didn't get involved. And I just kept my nose to the ground and did what I had to do. And I don't think I ever... Oh, we may have gone to a football game or two, you know, but as far as fraternizing, I didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds that way.
And one of the interesting things was when I was taking my first course in programming in computer science, I would hand in my programs. You'd have to work down in the computer center and work it all out, and I would hand them in, and the instructor said to me one day, "You sure do things differently than the other students do."
How so?
He said, "Well, you always get the right answer, but you go about it in a different way." And I said, "Well, maybe they all get together to do it." I said, "I don't have time to do it." So I would get an A on all the practical things, but the fellow that was teaching the course would say, "Well, there are other ways of doing it, you know." I don't know. So I sort of kept my nose to the grindstone and did it. And, well, of course I grew up with this, you don't copy, you don't cheat. This is ground into me from the day I first went to school as a little girl. We didn't do that. And I don't understand why kids think that that's our right to do now. I just don't understand it.
You know, I think I've covered most of the areas that I'm interested in. Do you have any additional comments or observations you'd like to make at this point?
No, I think this is sort of interesting to do.
This has been very interesting.
But I do think there's something. I'm a little alarmed at all this sexual harassment talk that's going around. You know, the way they're talking about women being sexually harassed, mm-hmm. and if someone tells a dirty joke or something, that's sexual harassment. And I think I don't know. It seems to me that these must be fairly well-protected women that haven't had a lot of contact with men, because although I can't say, even in the factory the men would be, you could tell they'd been out drinking beer all night because they'd spent half the morning at the water fountain. But they never, well, they used to whistle, you know, things like that, but what's a whistle? You know, this, forget it.
So what you're saying is that this might be overblown today?
Oh, I think it has to be. I was a good-looking gal. I had people. I'm not anymore, you know, but I used to be. But people used to whistle and.
Did that offend you?
No. No, frankly, I used to just ignore it because my mother told me if somebody's bothering you, just ignore it. And I grew up with a sticks and stones sort of thing drilled into me. That sticks and stones can hurt your bones, but words will never hurt you or something like that.
Sticks and stones will break your bones.
Will break your bones, but words
will. Names will never hurt you.
Words will never hurt you, yeah. And I was teased a lot when I was a little kid because I was the only one in school that wore glasses. I wore glasses from the time I was 2. And I just think I got toughened up so that things didn't bother me like apparently they bother a lot of other people. I don't know. That's my only... Because